From Transcription to Transduction, the voice of Joseph Beuys in Audio Arts. My fascination to revisit Joseph Beuys's recordings published by Audio Arts stemmed from 2013, when I invited William Furlong to create a new sound work for Villa Romana in Florence, which today is home to a residency program for German artists. Given the specific context, I suggested to Furlong the idea to work with Beuys's unpublished audio material, which would have been collected in a publication to accompany the exhibition. While this publication might still happen in the future, in this audio essay I would like to go back to the time when Furlong and Beuys first met, listening to their voices and conversations again. Dipping in and out from the Audio Arts archive, I will reconstruct the history of each recording, following a chronological narrative, yet inviting you, the listener, to play back these oral fragments which will vividly take you back in time. I will end the essay with a new recording I've made in collaboration with the artist Run Space 5 years. This is a response to Beuys's conversation at the Institute of Contemporary Arts in London, at the exhibition Art into Society, Society into Art. This exhibition was organized in the autumn of 1974 by the curators Norman Rosenthal and Christoph Yakimidis. In preparation for the project, which involved 7 German artists, a colloquium was organized in April 1974 in Berlin to discuss the contents and strategies of the show. At the colloquium, Beuys expressed his interest in being present in the exhibition all the time. He said, "My interest in the exhibition is in my permanent presence. No special space is needed, just 4 blackboards, 1 red and 1 white chalk and a wooden chest. When I have to be absent, the blackboard will stand for my presence." In the press notice sent out by the ICA on 29th November 1974, we read, "Beuys remained permanently at the exhibition for its entire duration, apart from the short intervals due to prior commitments in Northern Ireland, during which time he created one of his most important environments of the last few years, Richtkräfte, directive forces. The environment consisted primarily of 77 blackboards scattered about the floor of the gallery, which were the result of the permanent dialogue the artist was involved in with visitors to the exhibition." According to the ICA's press notice, Art into Society, Society into Art was one of the most successful avant-garde exhibitions held in London at the time. In 24 days, it attracted more than 9,000 people, and over 600 people attended a public discussion with the artists, which was organized 2 days after the opening. One of the remarkable features of Art into Society, Society into Art, was the permanent presence of all the artists involved during the first week of the exhibition. William Furlong first met and recorded the voice of Joseph Beuys on this occasion. You can hear Furlong's recollection of his first encounter with Beuys in his public lecture Strategic Interventions, given at the Royal Society in London in 1996.
"To begin with, when I stood listening to him, I felt here was someone being quite authoritarian. This wasn't the case. There was a considerable amount of humour and repartee and joking that went on throughout this whole session, which, as I said, lasted over a week. And I, having only started Audio Arts about a year, I was living in Brighton at the time, came up because I got a sense of something interesting happening at the ICA. And after about half an hour, I felt completely determined to stay. So one kind of came up for the whole week then. There was something quite powerful and extraordinary about what was going on. And this was at a point when very little was known about Boyce. I don't think he'd really done very much publicly in this country before. I know that he'd been in Edinburgh and so on, but this was really the first opportunity to engage with the artist.
Furlong recorded several hours of Boyce's discussions at the ICA with his portable tape recorder. However, only 30 minutes of these recordings were actually published on Audio Arts. What follows is an audio extract from the published recording, which was transcribed and published in the book Audio Arts, Discourse and Practice in Contemporary Art, edited in 1994 by Furlong.
Yes, now we have to speak once more about the new new necessity that the things have to be done. And we see that the government cannot make these things and cannot give out this knowledge. And the specialists in faculties, too, are not able to do it. Then we must find people, must really collect people who are who have already a bit of this ability, and people who are interested to reach ability. This must be the first step. And we have to care that we find as soon as possible a quantity as possible of people who are propagating this idea, to informating about this new way to go, about the necessity to go this way, because there is no other way to go. The established systems in the world are well known. There are only two in the principle: the Western private capitalistic system and the Eastern communistic system with the Politburo, in the principle and one political party dictatorship. Both sides are special owners of means of production. Here in the West, the private owners of the means of production. There, the other private owner, the Politburo, as a private owner. In the principle, that's the same thing. The same thing. With a special difference that that in the Eastern countries, mere the lack is that there is not individual freedom. And with the difference in the Western private countries, there's not enough possibility for brotherhood in economics. Because here still existing a rest of freedom, yes. For instance, I can speak about a revolutionary model now. I could not do it in Russia. Here I can do it. But because why I can do it is not a result of the politicians, it is a result from tradition. It stems from the bourgeois revolution, the French Revolution, with her ideals, freedom, equality, brotherhood.
Art into society, society into art, was not the first invitation to Boyce to perform in London. However, in Furlong's recollection, this exhibition was the first opportunity to interact with him, asking Boyce questions directly, but also arguing and disagreeing with him. Furlong was not the only interlocutor in that instance. In the original master tapes, the listener can hear other people from the audience asking questions to Boyce. There are also a series of extraordinary photographs taken by Chris Schwartz during the week, in which Boyce is portrayed in various moments of interaction with the audience, sitting and standing around him, moments that prove to be quite theatrical or performative. What is revealing about these visuals and audio records is how the dialogic space envisaged in the exhibition was indeed a space in which Boyce tested his thoughts on social sculpture, as well as introducing his radical ideas on education to a London audience. Part of these ideas soon took the form of a free school, with establishment in February 1974 of the Free International University for Creativity and Interdisciplinary Research. Thanks to the collaboration and support of the British art critic Caroline Teasdale, the Free International University soon arrived in the UK. After a first attempt in 1975 of bringing the Free International University to Dublin, Tisdall, together with artists Peter Dunn, Lauren Leeson, Robert McDowell and Cora Atkinson, coordinated the Free International University Symposium at University College London. This was another important occasion for Furlong to present audio arts to boys, as well as to continue a dialogue with Caroline Tisdall. As an active member of the Free International University, Furlong ran a workshop on information and distribution on audio cassette. In the proposal for the workshop, he wrote, "The audio cassette offers a method of recording and distributing information over a wide area not defined by constraints often associated with printed media. Currently, the majority use of audio cassette is put to pre-recorded music. However, there is a valuable potential function little realized and virtually untapped in this area of integrated technology. This is the distribution of and communication through human speech. As a method for exchange of ideas, attitudes and information based on the primary activity of most human beings, recorded speech offers close contact with original sources on an intimate kind of pre-literate society basis. Coded method of communications, as in the case of printed text, are absent and the receiver is brought into close proximity with the information source. The processes involved in receiving such information relate more to personal interactive methods, where impressions and learning take place on a non-linear reception of material. As speech tends to be less dense than prepared text, this gives substance to the notion of speech acting as a common denominator both through and across the various levels of specialization within social groups." Furlong attended other meetings of the Free International University and also documented other workshops subsequently hosted in various venues and occasions. Along with other English members of the Free International University, including John Latham, Barbara Stevini and Ian Breakwell, Furlong attended the Gathering at Documenta 6 in Kassel in 1977. In 1983, Boyce returned to London for his solo exhibition of drawings at the Victorian and Albert Museum. Furlong interviewed him together with the art critic Michael Newman. Unlike the tone of the performative and interactive discussion staged at the ICA, this recording conversation was the first audio arts interview with Boyce, in which the artist discusses in detail his work on display. The interview was produced and published as a special audio arts supplement. Here is a short extract from the interview.
Could we first of all start by you talking about the function of drawing as far as you're concerned? I mean, what importance does it have as an activity?
Yes. I think that it's like the notes one has to lay down if one is interested to follow a special line. Let's go away from art completely already in the beginning. Let's say every person who is interested to develop a special quality in a special work has to jot down some figures. Could be sentences, could be words, could be a kind of philosophy, could be mathematics or whatever. Anyway, it would come to a kind of drawing. So the understanding of a drawing is widened. And I see a script with some words or with a content of thought written down. For me, the drawing. And also for me, the drawing, when an architect makes a kind of sheet for making yeah, let's say the ground floor structure. And also people who are working in the industrial field, who are making very often or daily their work in the field of chemistry or physics or whatever kind of science it has, he has or she has to deal with. They have to come to a kind of visible product on a flat support. So this is the concept of my drawings principally. The only difference is that I, from the point of the method or the methodology, I decided in my life not to become a physicist, but to try it, to make an experiment with the art, to widen its understanding of the arts, to become able to change the social order.
Boys, who had always been a sympathizer of the Audio Arts project, agreed on a request by Furlong to sign about 86 copies of the supplement produced from the V&A interview. As Furlong underlined in his talk at the Royal Society, both the recordings at the ICA and the following interviews are not simply recordings of boys, but with boys. According to Furlong, Boyce always understood audio arts as a primary media through which to present his ideas and his actions, a collaborative endeavor which, according to architect Mel Goodin, encouraged Furlong to continue and further develop audio arts into an artistic practice itself. The production of the supplement was not the first opportunity for Boyce to show his support for the Audio Arts project. In 1985, he also donated a work of art for the celebrated fundraising event held at the Riverside Studios. Named as the Audi Ceremony, the Grand Gala Benefit Night was organized by artist Bruce McLean and critic Mel Goodin. It was attended by many established London-based artists, art critics and curators, including Anthony Gormley, who designed the statuette for the awards, Susan Hiller, Richard Cork and Robin Glasnig, just to mention a few. This has been recounted by many of Furlong's collaborators as one of the most successful and joyful events in the history of audio arts. But to come back to Boyce's gift, the story in brief goes like this. Boyce, apparently, donated a hat full of fat, which was immediately purchased by his gallerist Anthony Doffe. There are many curious anecdotes about this episode. Apparently, Anthony Doffe, present at the Audi ceremony, involuntarily damaged the work in the irrepressible desire and hurry to possess it. As a result, we don't have any trace of the mysterious hat, except the amount of jokes and gossip which is sparked after the gala. The last recording made by Furlong with Boyce happened in London again at Boyce's solo exhibition Plight at the Anthony Doffe Gallery in September 1985. This time the interview took the form of a one-to-one conversation in the gallery space, muffled by felt, one of the most loved and symbolic materials used by Boyce in his sculptures.
Well, I'm in the Anthony Doffe Gallery. I've just looked around the installation, in fact, that Joseph Boyce has made, called Plight. Perhaps we could start by you talking about the sources of this piece of work, which has involved installing felt around the interior of the gallery and placing a grand piano, a blackboard and a thermometer. Perhaps we could talk about the sources of this particular piece.
Yeah, it all started with a joke, being related to the difficulty in which the gallery was when the very noisy, terrible noisy deconstruction of the building behind Anthony's wall and now the reconstruction of the whole building will stay for the near future. And so Anthony, who was very despaired then, and asked me even if it would not better to go away from that place. I said, I tried to advise him that I didn't feel that that was necessary. I said, only you have to stand it for a while, and the place is good. The connection from this gallery to this gallery is okay. There is no reason to move. Well, there is a hard noise. So 2 years, perhaps. But then I made a joke and said, but I'm also, I can also easily make a kind of muffling sculpture, the idea of a muffling sculpture of felt, and to make it as a big exposition. That was a joke. And then we both forgot it, almost, didn't speak any longer about this. And then only 3 weeks before, I received a letter from Judy, his assistant of Anthony, reminding me on that utterance I did during that time, and she meant it would be honestly of interesting to make now a felt installation which with this kind of meaning, insulation from outside influence of danger or noise or whatever, temperature. And then I decided to make this this piece. So I developed this kind of installation.
As Furlong pointed out in his talk, the voice of boys in the mid-80s had changed. His way of speaking sounds more focused and somehow controlled compared to the exultations heard at the ICA, but not less mesmeric. This was the last chance to record Boyce in London before his death in January 1986. We have to wait about 10 years after the disappearance of Boyce for these recordings to re-enter the public sphere. In 1996, Furlong was invited to give his first public lecture on Boyce at the Royal Society. During this lecture, Furlong presented extracts from the recordings made with him between 1974 and 1986, which are partly incorporated into this essay. While this body of recordings represents today an important historical source that partly documents Boyce's actions and lectures, what Furlong has captured through every single recording is a vivid, palpable oral portrait of the artist's artwork. A portrait that certainly took a more creative route in the late 90s, when Furlong started to create new sound works by assembling original recordings taken from the Audio Arts Archive. These are often mapped spatially into a gallery space or staged as site-specific sound installations in outdoor spaces or less formal settings. The first work that inaugurated this creative archival impulse was Conversation Piece, made in 1998, a full-channel sound work. In this work, the voice of Boyce resurfaces in a constructed conversation with Andy Warhol, Marcel Duchamp and John Cage. Here is a short extract from the piece.
Then only I felt people could get information from a wider understanding of art.
As we know, art, etymologically speaking, means to make.
Sometimes people get the idea or get the experience, and it changes their way of living.
Yes.
And every person, as an individual, is able to create his own culture completely. That is especially interesting to make clear on a person like Marcel Duchamp, who tried to destroy the whole kind of tradition.
Yes.
And was hinting towards common worker with his Pissoir piece, because he said, this is an artwork only in showing it in a special other context. But he missed the point completely to say and to find out the logics in saying, if this is a work of art which is not done for me, which is done from some Mr. Matt, or he made this, an anonymous worker in the factory, then the creator is really the worker. So he didn't enlarge all the work and all the labor to the new understanding of art as a necessity to start everything in humankind's labor from this point of view.
I'm not at all in accord with this.
No, it's actually, it's so exciting. It's just incredible.
The voice of boys recently reappeared in Furlong's last exhibition, Speaking to Others, Who Speaks to Who, presented at Villa Romana in Flores in 2013. Here, Furlong created a continuous sound piece in which various extracts from the unpublished recordings made at the ICA were arranged spatially along the perimeter of the ground floor of the villa. In discussing with Furlong how audio arts project began and how boys responded to it, Furlong underlined the fact that it all started by talking to others and getting a positive reaction.
In those days, it was not so easy to do things because, well, it was both not so easy but easier. There was no heavy bureaucracy. I mean, I had a small grant soon after I started it, but at the time, there was nothing other than an idea that brought it forward. And as a result of that and talking to others, and voice comes into this, that's how it began, by communicating the idea of this innovation to others and them responding mainly positively. And there are key people like Boyce who responded positively to it. I mean, it was made for him, really, a publication on tape that didn't have a physical form other than the voice. You know, so there were no kind of vested interests, no financial entities attached to it, so it was absolutely very close to what we understood Boyce to be about, what we know him to be about, which is that, is there a way in which you could energize a group of people through speech, through ideas, and through interaction?
Listening back to the audio arts recordings, we encounter a formidable insight on how Boyce's verbal sculptures are entangled with the sound of the artist's voice, its modulation, intonation, energy, and rhythm. In short, what Roland Barthes would call the grain of the voice. Listening to the grain of the voice means moving away from the abstract horizon of lexicon and meaning, and instead paying attention to the textural element of voice, feeling each breath and each utterance. Voice, as argued by many authors, is both language and body. And despite the fact that voice is sound, speech is its natural destination. According to Barthes, the grain of the voice is what fails to be written, or remains to some extent untranslatable, as it is deeply and ontologically attached to the body. He said, transcribed, speech obviously changes its receiver and thereby even its subject, for there is no subject without an other. The body, although still present, no language without a body, ceases to coincide with the person, or to put it better yet, the personality. If voice does always imply a mouth, a subject, how it is possible to produce a written text without failing a body subject? Should we simply accept that what Barthes calls the grain of the voice cannot be accurately reproduced? Or is there any other way out? Since the widespread availability of recording equipment in the late 60s and the subsequent growing production of audio recordings by scholars, the use of interview transcriptions as historical sources has largely been debated in the context of oral history since the 70s, remembering also that oral historians have generally been suspicious of the transcript, seeing it as a secondary tool. In his essay, Perils of the Transcript, written in 1972, Marxist historian Raphael Samuel observed that too often historians transcribe speech according to the conventions and constrictions of written prose. Samuel argues that the collector of the spoken word, of oral memory and tradition, is in a privileged position of creating and interpreting his own archive. He writes, "Unless recordings can be preserved in their original integrity and made freely available for other researchers to consult, they will remain locked forever in the preoccupations of the collector, immune to criticism." Almost 50 years after this text was written, it seems that the concerns of Raphael Samuel of preserving the original integrity of recordings has been to some extent addressed by the establishment of many sound archives and digitization projects. For example, the Save Our Sounds project initiated by the British Library, through which all the audio arts and published recordings, among other sound collections, will be finally digitized. However, while this project will guarantee full access to the original unpublished material, many questions do remain open. Who does have the authority to transcribe Boyce's speech and eventually publish these recordings into a printed form? What is the advantage or the value of a printed publication compared to new digital audio platforms where we can listen to an increasing number of original recordings? And above all, who will be granted the permission to use these audio documents without running into the issue of copyright? These questions seem to affect both the work of scholars and artists who will be interested to work with this material in the next 40 years, until the copyright for the voice and the works of Boyce will be completely free to use. I would like to argue that Forlong's multifaceted dialogic approach seems to represent a key turning point here. While the legacy of Boyce's social sculpture has been fully recognized by Forlong, as well as by many other contemporary artists, there is also an important legacy of the Audio Arts Project, which should not be underestimated or overshadowed by its master. In exploring the use of the audio cassette medium as a new form of information and distribution, Forlong pioneered the communicative, aesthetic, social and political potential of an art magazine by turning it into a dialogic audio space of a new kind. What is simply but aptly called a recorded space for contemporary art. Inspired by Forlong's expanded sound practice of making, producing, and presenting audio recordings within various critical and artistic frameworks, I've started thinking about how a creative engagement with the Audio Arts Archive might therefore continue in the future. How then might a new generation of artists be inspired by the collaboration between Boyce and Forlong and the legacy that lies somewhere in between their artistic and critical practices? Can we play with, imitate, revisit Boyce's recordings made by Forlong and learn something from this process? Or would this be an irreverent gesture which would discredit the ethos of their work and legacy? How then it is possible to activate this unique body of recordings as a potential utopia for the present? By embracing the spirit of the Free International University and its predicament on creativity, interdisciplinarity and autonomy, I have begun an experiment with the recordings made at the ICA listened to in this essay. In May 2018, I proposed this recording as a material for a workshop organized in collaboration with the artists of 5 years in London. Hosted as part of the project Being Together is Not Enough, the workshop invited participants to reflect on the challenges of transcription as a creative practice. 4 readings were created from 4 different methods of transcription, including through verbatim, edited transcript, affective verbatim, and embodied transcript. used as scripts as well as scores for reenacting Boyce's speech, these transcripts were read aloud and performed live for making new audio recordings. I have called this experiment from transcription to transduction, to name a process which shifts from the simple production of a written text from an audio source to a double process in which the original audio source is turned into a text and then, via transducer, converted back into sound. As I've learned from sound reproduction technologies, a transducer is normally a device which, as in the case of the telephone, turns the voice into electricity, sending it down a phone line and turning it back into sound at the other end. Transduction is therefore a metaphor adopted here to convert one form of energy to another, using the human body at both ends. The energy of Joseph Beuys's voice recorded, revisited, and finally converted back into sound again.
Yes, we have to speak once more about the new necessity that the things have to be done. And we see that the government cannot make these things and cannot give out this knowledge. And that the specialists in faculties too are not able to do this. We must find people, collect people who are interested a bit of these problems, abilities. This must be the first step. We have to care that we find this possible quantity of people who are propagating this idea, this new way of informating about the new ways to do these things. The established systems in the world are well known. There are only two principal ones, the Western private capitalistic system and the Eastern communist system with a Politburo, with the principle of a one political party dictatorship. Both sides are the special owners of the means of production. Here in the West, there are the private owners of the means of production. There are the Politburo, the private owners. As a private owner, is in principle the same thing, with a special difference that in the Eastern countries, where there is a lack, there is not the individual freedom. There is a special difference in the Western private countries is that there is not enough possibility for brotherhood in economics, because it still exists a rest of freedom. But I can speak here, I can speak about a revolutionary moral now. But I could not do it in Russia, in Russia. Here I can do it, but because why I can do it is that it's not as a result of politicians, it is a result of tradition. It stems from the bourgeois revolution, the French Revolution, with its ideals of freedom, equality, and brotherhood.
From transcription to transduction, the voice of Joseph Beuys in Audio Arts, narration and text by Lucia Farinati, audio montage by Lucia Farinati with the assistance of Richard Crowe, London 2018. Original recordings from Audio Arts in order of appearance. William Furlong at the Royal Society, London, 1996. From the Audio Arts Supplement, Joseph Beuys Lectures, 1996, Arts and Science, published in 1997. Joseph Beuys at the Institute of Contemporary Arts, London, 1974, Audio Arts, Volume 2, Number 1, 1975. Interview by William Furlong with Joseph Beuys at the Victoria and Albert Museum, 1983, Audio Arts Supplement, 1983. Interview by William Furlong with Joseph Beuys at the Anthony D'Offit Gallery, 1985, Audio Arts, Volume 8, Number 1, 1986. William Furlong, Conversation Piece, 1998. Lucia Farinati in conversation with William Furlong, Villa Romana, Florence, 27th of June, 2013. The embodied transcript of Joseph Beuys' speech was performed by Essie Eshun and recorded at 5 Years, London, 18th of May, 2018. Background sound from David Sylvian's piece, The Healing Place, Virgin, 1986. Courtesy of William Furlong, Audio Arts, Tate Archive and Essie Eshun. Special thanks to Edward Dorian and John Hughes of 5 Years.